is the Day Zero update for November 19th, 2017. I'm Filippo D'Alfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brian Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And let's face it, folks, I mean, there's only really one major story that happened this week. So, yeah, we will be talking about that, Star Wars and EA, and EA being EA. But before we get to that, we do have other things that we need to cover, because some other stuff did happen. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel so unprepared, like I should have a joke ready for that. Like, yeah, you guys know what happened, and then, you know, insert something really stupid.
Mm-hmm. That's what she
I'm
said.
Off my game, folks. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
But you know what happened this week?
But we, I'm sure some of us have been playing some stuff. You know, me, I've been continuing my abusive relationship with Forza 7 and also playing a little bit of Road Rage. Yeah, this game's not good. It's, imagine...
Wait, Forza or Road Rage?
Road Rage. Okay. Forza is good but frustrating. Road Rage is, well, I think I may actually get the opportunity to use the word excrescence in a review, so that may be a good thing, I guess. But yeah.
Okay then.
It's imagine.
It's good to expand the vocabulary.
Yeah, but imagine a game that wants to be Road Rash so bad, but it actually forgets what Road Rash was really about. Yeah, that's Road Rage. It's like
I'm the Road Rashiest.
It's not even, it's like,
damn.
It's like somebody described what, it's like somebody described what Road Rash was, and then the developers just kind of made a game that approximated that without actually playing Road Rash.
It sounds a lot like what happened with Batman versus Superman. Like they thought they knew what Batman and Superman were about, but they never actually read a comic.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is what Road Rage is. It looks like a PS2 game. It has awful music. The physics make no goddamn sense. The weapons barely work. Let's see, what else?
Wow, really? Because you know, the weapons are just to knock people off of. That's really, how do you fuck that up?
It's like everything that they could have possibly done wrong, they did wrong.
That's champion level shit. I'm impressed.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and this is, you know, because Road to Redemption, which went out of early access a couple of months ago, exists, and yeah, that's a much better game. That one has some rough edges, but they've kind of smoothed those out over time. And that game is really fun, really good, and this one is not. So, yeah, I guess I will have to do a review and try to make that at least 600 words. But yeah, it's not a good game, so don't buy it. Yeah. So that's me. How about you, Pat?
Well, thanks to a pre-Black Friday sale from GameStop, I did find a way to get my hands on Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite without paying Capcom for it. So that happened. Been playing a good deal of that, especially last night. Actually, quite enjoy it. It is, the fact that they moved back to 2-on-2 and got rid of assists really makes it a throwback to kind of my Marvel, the CPS2 installments that I came up playing.
There's no assists?
No assists. They replaced the assist mechanic with the Infinity Stones. So
you mean those Easter eggs they sold in the collector's edition?
Something like that. Yeah, basically you pick one of the six when you're choosing your characters, and you can either do there's a move that you can do as many times as you want, whenever you want, that's mapped to L1. And that's one mechanic. It also has its own meter that fills up, and you can press L1 and R1 at the same time to go into... it's sort of a comeback mechanic, kind of like X-Factor, but each one has a different state that you go into. I'm sure if you've watched even a little bit of Marvel Infinite on YouTube, you've seen the Space Stone. They call it Infinity Surge. And so it sort of serves the purpose of assists, but definitely in a new way, and in a way that allows the return of the punches and kicks button layout from Marvel vs. Capcom 2. So it's really an interesting hybrid, but I think they did a pretty good job with it. I'm just looking forward to taking this game online and seeing how I manage in it compared to, you know, Marvel vs. Capcom 2 or 3, where it was I was just not in my element, if you will. I actually feel like this is a game I can play.
Hmm.
So, the interesting thing for me was that going into Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, going through the menus, there's not a mention of CFN anywhere, which really surprised me because I thought that was going to be Capcom's big genre unification platform. But there's not a single mention of it anywhere in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, so that might be a sign of things to come. Also, a little bit on the side, while I was waiting for Marvel to arrive, and in light of some recent developments in the fighting genre, I sat down and played a couple hours of Fighting Lair just to sort of reacclimate myself to that series. And, yeah, that was pretty fun. I'm actually, in light of some news that we'll be talking about in the Shrapnel, kind of surprised that there aren't more Street Fighter EX holdovers in the original Fighting Lair, considering that the new one is nothing but Street Fighter EX holdovers. So hopefully we'll see some of those Fighting Lair characters show up, like exclusive Fighting Lair characters showing up in the new game at some point. Well, that's been my week.
All right, I guess it's my turn. All right. Yeah. Basically, it's still mostly Horizon Zero Dawn. That has pretty much been my gaming for this week. It's
such a good game.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And it's, you know, I had to trade it in a while ago because, you know, that was when Mass Effect Andromeda was coming out and I needed the credits. And so after I finished Wolfenstein, you know, and did my review, which is currently up on Smashpad, hint, hint. I decided that, you know, I needed to go back because I never really got to finish it. So I went back in, I decided to restart, and God, I forgot how much fun that game is.
Yep. It's $20 right now if anybody hasn't picked it up. I believe Best Buy has it for $20 right now. So if you have Gamers Club unlocked, it's $16.
Yep. And also you've got the new,
right now.
And you've also got the new DLC expansion that's out now too.
Yeah.
So,
have you played that at all, Brandon?
I haven't even finished the campaign yet, so
just work your way towards that.
Yeah.
I will say it's beautiful. I don't know if you've seen any videos of it. The thing that blew my mind is there is a you know, it's like it's in the snow.
Uh-huh.
And there is grass. They rendered grass under the snow. So yeah. If you roll through the snow, you will find grass. It's like, oh my God, you beautiful bastards. Like, I love that kind of just small detail stuff. That really does it for me, and I was so impressed that they did that.
Yeah, but one of the most it's so much fun. Just, you know, just every little thing has these touches to it. Like you said, just going out and hunting for machines. That in itself, you know, it's like you could be going towards your next point for the campaign, but then you'll come across a pack of machines and you're like, you know what, I think I'm going to go do a little hunting now. Just for the hell of it.
Yeah, that's a great game.
Yeah, and or you can just go off in another direction because there's always something else to find. Yeah, but that's pretty much been what I've been playing. So, Chris, what about you?
So I finally got a chance to check out Skyrim VR on PSVR.
You have my condolences.
And it's
Are
really
you
good.
Still motion sick?
It depends on how the game does locomotion, but with this, they offer locomotion and teleports. I did the locomotion for a few minutes and was like, okay, I need to turn this off or else it's going to get worse. The way they do it with the two moves is interesting. They just have different actions on, different buttons on each of the remotes. So they don't mirror them at all. So the move button on the left one is your locomotion or your teleport. You can change which one in the options. They have a bunch of different settings, which is pretty cool for that stuff. I just started using the teleport, and that's pretty much solved most of the issues. And the only real knock against the game is that it doesn't look as good as any of the other versions, which makes sense, because it's very much a taxing game that has to run at least 60 frames per second. So there's lots of aliasing and such, which is fine, because I'm not really coming to that to look at the best possible visuals, or else I wouldn't be on PSVR at all for that stuff. And so they have turning on the X and O buttons on the right move. So you just sit there and turn around with that. Well, you can free look, obviously. Attacks are on the... it's trigger for magic stuff. If it's, sword, axe, whatever, you actually swing it. And it all works really well. The teleport, one of the cool things about the teleport is that it essentially breaks the encumbrance system. So when you get encumbered with a controller or keyboard, you basically move really slowly. When you are using the teleport, it just limits you to the very short option, which uses no stamina. So you can sit here and do this quick little short teleport infinitely and just get around at least a few times faster than whatever the slow encumbrance walk is.
So you can basically just pick up everything you see and then not really worry about it.
Yeah, you're still moving pretty fast. Not as fast as with the normal teleport, but that's like Doom level fast. Where it's like, I don't need to be running this fast around Skyrim. Especially when you're trying to loot everything. The looting is a little bit weird. I kind of wish there was a cursor for that, because you're aiming the right... whichever hand you put your dominant hand, is the one you loot with. With your right hand, you're kind of aiming it at the specific item you want to loot. You don't have to be like directly right next to it as well, so you can kind of get a little bit of distance, just try and aim it at everything. But without the cursor, you're kind of not knowing what you're aiming at. So I'm kind of holding the move in weird angles, like trying to get stuff that's right below me, all that sort of stuff. And it mostly works fine. It's just I like a cursor so I know what I'm aiming at, so I can more precisely pick what I'm looting. But otherwise, you can just sit there and run around pointing it at things, hitting the right move button to just loot whatever is there. It all works pretty well. It runs well. It looks pretty fine. I'm looking forward to playing some more of it. I basically got out of the intro area down to River Run, I think it is, and over to White Run, which I hit a cow with my fire. And so I got a bounty. So while I was on the way to White Run, I got run into by a guard who's like, hey, pay me up or whatever. And I didn't know what else would happen after that, but I paid up, and he took me right to the castle that I was going to anyway. It's like, oh, cool, you just saved me lots of time. And I just basically went in, talked to the king, and I looted everything afterwards. Because like all this stuff shows steal before you talk to him. And then afterwards, like most of it is like, hey, you can just take all this wine and these bowls and plates and all this food. And there's like weird like taffy stuff in there. It's like, okay, I can just loot all this, take all the stuff I don't need and sell it, and just be rich. And it seems like a game, if you're trying to play Skyrim straight, you're probably going to have issues with it. But if you're like, I've got any other version I can play, you know, normal Skyrim, I'm just going to sit here and have VR fun and break the game a little bit, especially when you don't have access to the mods, I'm fine with being able to sort of stretch things a little bit and do things that normal Skyrim wouldn't be able to do. So far it's been pretty cool. I'm looking forward to playing some more. And that is going to be a big Black Friday bundle, because that's dropped from $4.49 to $3.49 for this week at pretty much everywhere, I think. Best Buy, Amazon, Target, GameStop. And that's sort of the version to get, because it comes with the new headset, the new Moves. They have the whatever USB the DualShock 4 uses in most phones.
A micro USB?
Yeah. I think instead of mini USB, which the
three...
It's micro.
Yeah, it's micro.
Yeah. So it has those connectors on it. And comes with the camera and the game. And that's quite a bit more than the $349, especially $449, because I think it's... The headset's $350. I think the camera is $60. The game's $60, and the Moves and the official bundles are $100.
Yeah,
that's pretty good
saving there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially when you got like the GT Sport bundle, which besides GT Sport not having great VR stuff in it, it's kind of like one-on-one exhibition races.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, do all your normal races in VR. That has the old headsets. It's like, okay, you bundled the old headset with a game that doesn't really do much with VR. That's fine. But yeah, that's going to be a big game for PSVR this holiday. I've been playing Nier Automata, so I had that problem with the pipe in the Sunken Ruins. I found out I was in the wrong pipe. There are two of them I could have gone into. One was very... kind of hidden. It's kind of fallen apart. I had to find a GameFAQs walkthrough that had pictures in it. It's like, oh, that's not the pipe I was going in at all. So I went to that, did all the cool boss battle stuff they had in that area, the Sunken City, with the big giant robot that is mostly all shmup boss fights.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. And now I'm buzzing along towards the next thing. But yeah, so far so good with that. Also played Hitman Game of the Year, specifically the new campaign it adds, which is called Patient Zero. The one downside is there's no new trophies for this. All this new missions. But otherwise, it's the same Hitman stuff, redressings of some of the existing missions, which is just a lot of fun. I played the first one, which is set in Bangkok, where there's sort of a cult taking up to the top floors in one of the parts of the hotel. And I was trying to kill as many people as I could. They had some good stuff there. And just having a lot of fun. I think I started that as a clown. They give you a clown outfit. That's one of the featured outfits they give you. To play around with, and yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in that. Yeah, I need to play the other stuff, but so far, so good.
They brought back the elusive targets, so.
Yeah, started, I think, yesterday. Yesterday or Friday, the first one, which I did on my PS4 save, failed it. Because that was the first one, so I didn't quite know what to do. But I need to do that on my Xbox One version. One of the cool things they did is when they put out all this, the update for all this stuff, people that had at least completed one elusive target got a special coin. Coins are a distraction item you can use. Because people see a quarter or whatever get thrown around, they're like, oh, free money. I'm going to go pick this up.
Just like real life.
Yeah, even though the numerous reports out there, people leaving like pennies all over the sidewalk and nobody picks them up. but everybody in Hitman freaks out when they hear a quarter go dropping somewhere.
That just tells me that they need to have hired killers' wages a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it seems
to be a thing.
You can steal them from places as well, depending on the map. There's even
so
one part of Marrakesh where you can give those coins to a beggar, and that's like a specific challenge. I think it's specifically because there's not many coins available freely on that map. So you have to really figure out where the other ones are at. Because you get 3 when you pick it as your item. I think you need 6 at least. Mm. Yeah, it's always a good way to just show how stupid and fun the AI is. You just throw a coin, you're like, oh, a coin. One of them says, like, oh, I'm going to pick this up. And it's like, oh, welcome to my trap. Knife to the head. And, yeah, always good stuff with Hitman. And I think that's been pretty much it.
All right.
All right, wait. All right.
About you? Yeah, mine's pretty quick. I've been doing WoW as usual. There's a new raid coming out after Thanksgiving. We got Tuesday, so it's supposed to be like the last raid of the expansion, so I'm really curious to see what's going on. I'm really interested with what they're doing with the whatever the new expansion is going to be. I think it's called Battle for Azeroth. I'm curious to see how that goes. Although, narratively, I don't know kind of what their thought process is, because so like in for anybody that follows WoW, which I know you guys really don't, like I know some of you guys though did play Warcraft 3 and stuff, and so this is sort of like the end of the Burning Legion, which showed up in Warcraft 3 that helped create the undead and helped create the Lich King and all that stuff. Like, this is sort of their end, right? Like, end game shit for them.
Yeah.
And so it's really funny because it's like, how do you go from something like that, it's like world ending, to going back to the initial conflict, which is like Horde versus Alliance, which is really a lot of just, you know, get off my lawn type shit. And like, I get the narrative hook for it. What they're doing is at the end of the expansion, Sargeras, who's like this crazy mad titan, basically stabs the planet, and it starts leaking out the it's a whole thing with I won't go into the lore for you guys, but basically it starts leaking out this stuff called Azurite, which is like basically a supremely powerful like alchemical substance. It would be kind of like Red Bull, except Red Bull then would do something to you like an altered beast, right? Like that kind of thing. and so it's like that kind of thing. So like the big thing is like all of these the factions, apparently what's going to cause the big uproar is going to be all these factions sort of fighting, because this is like game changing shit. I mean, essentially it would be like if we were back in the 1800s and an oil well fucking sprung up, except that oil well also like turned you into Superman. You know, like that kind of thing. So so that seems to be where they're going with that. So I'm curious to see what they're going to do. I'm curious to see how the expansion finishes out. So I've been doing that. And in between that stuff, I've been playing Witcher 3 because I just got back into that. Oh, my God, it's so good. It's just so good. Like, those guys at CD Projekt Red are just – they're just something else. And I even – and I normally don't really do this, but I started checking out the books because, you know, look, we all know, we're all video game fans. We all know that 9 times out of 10, the video game books suck. But these books came out – The Witcher was originally a story that the video game started, which is, of course, the big difference. And apparently the writer over there is kind of like George R.R. Martin, except he knows how to finish things.
yeah.
So – but, yeah, so he's got a couple of couple of books, and I started reading one of them, just one of the ones with the short stories, and I'm surprised at how good it is. It's translated from Polish, so you know you would expect it to be, you know, a little bit uneven, but it's really not. Like the way that Geralt speaks, he's a little rougher in the novels than he is in the games. But it's been really enjoyable because, like, you know, with Witcher 3 or any of the Witcher games, really, you know, it thrusts you into this world that's already really established. And the games do a great job narratively of getting you where you need to be. But the novels provide so much insight into, like, why the Witchers do what they do and the type of monsters that are out there. Like, I'll tell you what, I would not want to live in this place. Like, you know, you can get possessed, you know, by a demon baby. You know, you can get stalked by a werewolf that also turns into a bear. Like, this is not a pleasant place to live. It's crazy. I'm enjoying the game even more now that I'm reading the books. So I've been doing that and then saving all of my energy to shit on EA. And I can't wait. And I've also been playing Mario Odyssey, but I'm a little turned off on that because I'm still in the early parts, but I've also seen a ton of the stuff my son has done in it, so I feel like some of the oomph of the game might have been ruined for me. But the other thing is, and this is no knock against Mario, because Mario games are Mario games. There's a certain amount of things that you expect, but for me, I'm just noticing, like, nothing is – I haven't come across anything, like, really, like, joyfully surprising is probably the best way that I can explain it, because I know, like, oh, you turn the camera this way, or there seems to be a little like break in the rock here. I know I can dive into that, and you hid something there. Like, and I don't know if it's just because I am so used to the way that these games are made that nothing surprises me, or just that I haven't got to anything that's like that's not sort of rote with the way that they've done things. And I'm sure there is, I'm sure there's some crazy stuff in there. I have not found anywhere where I can drop a penguin off a cliff yet. So right now it's a 3 out of 10, but yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to hopefully put some more time into it. And you know, it's interesting to me too, just as a side note, cause you know, we hear Chris talking about Skyrim, and I checked out one of the Batman Telltale games on Switch, and I already feel like the Switch is starting to show that it is a really powerful console as far as a portable, but not that great of a home console. Now, to their credit, Skyrim looks pretty good, but it's still it's sort of a feat. Like, oh, wow, look, Skyrim portable. This is insane. But then, like, you know, at the same time, it definitely chugs, and it's kind of like, okay, this thing couldn't do – a game that was released 6 years ago on a system that was like 8 years old at that time. Like, it kind of gives me pause for what we're in for. Like, I really hope that third parties are still going to take advantage of what makes the Switch really unique. But I'm already starting to be concerned that once they get some of these old ports and crap out of the way, that there's not going to be a lot of people making a lot of big stuff for it because of that, you know, the compromise they're going to have to make. So I hope I'm wrong, but I'm already starting to notice this, and the Switch has only been out since what, March?
Yeah.
So that really concerns me. But of course, you know, maybe they just need to learn how to take advantage of it better. But same thing with LA Noire. Like, you're like, oh, this is cool in the sense that this is a portable version of a game, but it runs the same or worse in that sense. And LA Noire, I think, was put out in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things that concerns.
Rockstar and Bethesda are not really well known for optimizing their games.
No, and to be fair, neither's Telltale. So
yeah,
you know, it could just be one of those things. But it is one,
like,
of those.
All those games have issues on pretty much every platform.
Yeah, I know, but it still gives me pause because of the way that they run. I hope, you know, again, I hope we see some people, you know, we see some developers really work to the Switch's strengths. But that was something that was as far as, like, you know, kind of looking at things over all this week, that really kind of took me aback, because we're like 6, 7, no, 8 months into it, where it's like, holy shit, this is but to your point, Chris, I mean, they're not exactly, those companies are not exactly known for optimizing well.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue will just be storage for those games, because they're not going to go for lesser space when they want the whole experience. And the system only has, you know, 30 gigs on it.
Yeah, which is really like 26, isn't it? Something like that.
And which one? There's one of the games where it's like 12 gigs or whatever to install, and then it's like 20 gig update.
Yeah.
They're doing that Xbox stuff on there where it's...
Yeah, which is really frustrating. Speaking of Xbox stuff, I got an Xbox One X, and oh my god, the assets. It almost feels like Microsoft is in cahoots with Comcast to make me blow over my data cap so I can get charged more.
And external hard drive manufacturers.
Right? Like, and it's just like, come on, guys. Like, I don't know. The Xbox One's a cool system, man. I really – and, like, seeing some of the stuff that it does for this just shows that I'm, like – like I said, I'm going to be – you know, what we said before we started the show is, like, I'm not going to have 2017 Game of the Years. I'm going to have 2016. Like, I'm, like, playing the Xbox One X and going, how cool is it that this runs this so much better? And it's like, you know, Halo 3. it's just – that's just – it's just me, I guess, but
4K, yo.
4K, but oh my god, yeah, 4K assets. Holy shit, do you like 100 gigabytes? Because we're going to give you 100 gigabytes. Like, I really hope – I don't know. I hope that – you know,
directly to your brand new console.
Yeah, I really hope that they really start – just developers in general start really looking at compression, because I feel like that's really important. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like some of these 4K assets really should be shipped on the disc. Like – Not leaving that to be a download thing that I'm then responsible for. That's going to end up, you know, costing me an extra $30 because, you know, I need to download 3 trillion gigabytes because nobody knows how to use WinZip.
Yeah, they put the groundwork in place for that It's just that a lot of the launch stuff doesn't support that.
I gotta give him credit though.
Beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. No, I gotta give him credit though. The changing over from the Xbox One S to the Xbox One X is how it should be. I had so much trouble doing my PS4 to PS4 Pro, whereas it was literally just you select this thing on the Xbox dashboard, you move it over, and then you just plug in your new hard drive, and then boom, it's done. That's it. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, fuck you, Sony. Like, oh yeah, let me move this over. Let me back this up. Let me put a new fucking hard drive. Then let me reinstall the bullshit. And then like Microsoft's like, we got you, fam. So
I know, it took me like an hour to get it set up. It was like an hour update to do with the Xbox One X.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not talking about the actual update. Yeah, it had to do an update. Yeah. That was – I expected that. What pissed me off compared to doing it to my PS4 Pro was that I did a backup of my PS4 Pro stuff and then had to put in a new hard drive, which then requires you to reinstall the software on the PS4 and then copy over your shit. It took something
like – Yeah, I don't do any backup stuff.
Yeah, it was
bad. I just – put my stuff on the new new system, and then just downloaded everything else.
Mm.
Said I'll just take forever to download this stuff because Quantum Break is 160 gigs.
Yeah.
Yeah, data caps, boys.
I don't got one of those. Anyways.
Yeah, well, you know, you got free healthcare too, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. All right, so let's get to our quick stories of the week. We got some fighting game news. For some reason, Noctis is coming to Tekken 7.
Yeah, I've seen so many memes about that. Like, I'm in Tekken 7, bro. Man, I think you posted up something funny like, this guy's a cup of noodles, like fucking advertiser or some shit.
Yeah. He's everywhere.
Oh, man.
He doesn't even look like he fits there. I mean,
stay classy, Square.
Just based on his mobility, he looks pretty cancerous, so... I'm hoping it's not as bad as it looks, but I'm not optimistic.
Yeah. But he's going to be out spring 2018, or possibly not, depending on how severe the backlash ends up between now and then. So, yeah.
No, I think they're pretty committed to it.
Yeah. Well, Square gave them lots of money.
Just they don't like the character that they're adding?
Basically.
Well, it's not just that. They also really like the character that was, by all accounts, supposed to be in that spot.
Hmm.
And if you watch the trailer announcing Noctis, he looks like he would be really overpowered in the context of Tekken 7.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a multitude of things.
Like, you gotta love just warp around.
Well, and Namco doesn't have a good history of that. Like, anytime they do, like, a specific special version of something, that character always ends up being overpowered. Like, they did it within Soul Calibur quite a bit with different variations of characters. Like, I think, like, Link and Darth Vader could, like, totally fuck your shit up. Like, of course Darth Vader's going to kill Mitsurugi. Come on, man. Like, you know. But.
Yeah. Vader wasn't even the big offender in that game. It was Yoda.
Yeah, Yoda was even worse.
He was low profile all the time.
Yeah. Oh, you don't have to. You can just hold back and block low if you feel like it.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I have no mids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, anyway. So that's a thing. And then we got the final name for the Arika project, which is Fighting EX Layer. So, yes. Vexel.
Yeah, just rolls off the tongue.
That's been the best part of this generation is all of the acronyms, starting with the X-Bone to everything else. It's just fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get it. Because they could have just put it – they could have just called it Fighting Layer EX, and then it would have been Flex.
It would have made a ton of sense.
Yeah, but no, that's not what they did. So Fex.
Because of course they didn't.
Yeah. There's a 2-week beta run coming to the PS4. It starts what is it? 11th of December. For North America. So we'll be able to get our hands on it and try it out and see how it is. I mean, it looks good, so I'm gonna give it a shot and see how it goes.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it got me playing Fighting Layer.
it sounds like a digital STD.
Like, you've got Fexel.
You've got Fexel. Oh no. Yeah.
Anyways. So that's a thing.
Guy gave me Fexel.
Yeah. And it lasted 2 weeks. Oh, jeez.
Fact still sounds like what Comcast does to me with data caps.
Yeah. Also, we got character announcements for BB Tag. I'm sure.
Yeah. There's Azrael from Blaze Blue, who I guess should have been on the list of most likely characters, but was kind of under the radar. So it's nice that they're going a little bit off the board like that. Yukiko from Persona 4, who is probably the least surprising addition they could have made at this point. Mm. And then Gordo from Undernight, who I think he's going to be a pretty important character in this game. Just from a gameplay standpoint, I can see him going pretty high tier. Mm. So the trailer is linked in the show notes, and they aren't saying when the next wave of character reveals are going to be, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see another wave of characters before the end of the month. Mm. So
yeah, that character select screen's starting to fill out quite nicely.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think there are only two spots left on Blaze Blue, if I'm not mistaken.
Looks that way, yeah.
Really want to see some Iron Tager.
Yeah. So in other news, we got an announcement of a PS4 remake for Caligula Effect. That was a little unexpected.
Well, it was a very popular game that kind of flew under the radar because it was a PlayStation Vita exclusive. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. And so it's going to get a chance at on a larger stage on the PS4. And considering that this is a game by the original Persona team, that is Persona 1 and 2.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be considerable interest.
Oh, I don't doubt it. Especially, I mean, this is a like full-on remake. It's not they're not just taking the Vita version and sticking it there. They're actually putting some work into it. So,
yep,
and looks rather nice. So,
yeah,
that's coming out in May. So, you got a while to wait for that, unfortunately.
Yeah, but if you want to play the Vita version, it's out there right now.
Yep. And finally, another quick note, Marvel Heroes Omega is being shut down because...
Fuck you, Disney.
Yeah, they put all this work into it. It started to go really well. It's looking like it could have been something. Ah, no, we're done.
They pulled a Disney, like, hey, we're licensing our stuff out, got some cool stuff being made, and nope, we don't want it anymore. There's at least a cool side to this. Gazillion is going to be... it'll be shutting down on December 31st, at the end of this year. They're removing real money purchases ASAP and make the rest of the game free, so all the characters and such will be free. And so basically you can play it in an unlimited manner for the rest of the year, which is a good way for that game to go out.
Yeah.
So just say, hey, go out and buy, you know, all the characters and what you haven't been able to get, and enjoy.
Yeah.
To me, that just is the whole reason why I have such an issue with the free-to-play model, because you're putting money into something that you will never own, and, you know, if they decide to shut shit down, you're fucked.
Yeah, like, yeah.
They had a pretty good system for that, because you could grind out the currency to buy all that stuff, and I had enough for a mid-range character. I was working towards a max character, and that would give me 6... so I had a pretty good selection of characters. They also gave one free. Daredevil's free to each of the console versions to start off.
Yeah, but now that's going away, so all that time you put into it is just basically...
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Now I'm stuck with fucking Path of Exile. That's terrible on consoles.
God, I wanted to like that game, but oh, Jesus Christ, did they ever screw it up?
There's no Torchlight unless you get the original on Xbox One backwards compatibility.
Torchlight is garbage. Sorry.
I like
it a lot.
Two was a lot better, but...
Yeah,
two was a lot better.
Problem with the first is just the same...
Same thing.
Town dungeon.
Hey, look, I've been to this room 87 times. This half hour.
Yeah.
But you could send your pet out to sell all your shit for you.
Yeah.
Just keep fighting. Like, nobody else is doing that, I think.
Yeah.
Though Diablo, you just warp back to the town. They just don't give a shit about any sort of punishment.
That's because they want you to stay a while and listen, Chris. Come on.
Yeah. Anyways. Okay, so we'll now move on to our more in-depth topics of the week. We'll start off with Don't Nod's next game, Vampire, will not have DLC or microtransactions.
Yeah, because
I thought you were going to say it won't have vampires. What?
It's not really a huge surprise.
Yeah.
Well, there's not really. If you've seen the game, there's not really a lot of ways they could actually put them in, even if they wanted to.
It would just be like an expansion.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is. It's basically an action RPG. It's, they're not making it. They're making it to tell a narrative. It's kind of like it kind of reminds me of an early CD Projekt Red type title, you know. They're going for, they know their budget, they know how much they need to sell, and they're just making a game that's going to be a complete game right off the bat. And I find it kind of sad that this has to be news now.
I want to hone in on the fact that you talked about they know their budget.
Yeah,
I feel like that's really important.
Yeah,
they that's know kind their of budget. Don't Nod's thing. They're making sort of the mid-tier type of games.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive. They know their budget.
Yeah. Smart financial decisions. Imagine that. It worked for Hellblade. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I still haven't played that. It's good, though.
Yeah, it's very good.
Play it. Make sure you got headphones on.
Yeah. As we discussed. At the beginning of the show, I have the headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Figure out a way to hook those up to your PS4. And you'll be
I got an amp I can hook up. So. Yeah. Oh, God. And put it all over my face, neck, chest.
So, yeah, Vampire. But from what I've been looking at it, it looks good. I'm actually looking forward to it. I want to play this game because it looks quite spectacular.
I think it's coming out, next year?
Yeah.
Next year.
Yeah, I got pushed.
Yeah.
Which is good. That doesn't need to come out anytime soon.
No.
We're all trying to catch up for this year's games. Yeah. Much less trying to buy new stuff like
Skyrim. You gotta go my route and just everything last year.
Yeah.
It's cheap and it'll make you happy. Like, oh, all of the bullshit has been patched.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yep. Next up we got Nintendo, who said they're going to be spending a lot of time reevaluating their relationship with YouTube.
I bet they are. Now, I say this as a YouTuber myself. There's a reason that my channel has been Nintendo free for the last couple of years.
Yeah, because they're assholes. That's pretty much how that boils down.
Yeah, Nintendo strikes me as the type of company that's like, we're going to try and control this however we want. Like they sort of strike me as like, and I know this may be... may not be the right analogy for some people, but I actually have a pretty large amount of respect for Disney, for the most part. Whereas Nintendo strikes me as like they want to be Disney, but they don't have the cognizance or foresight that Disney has whatsoever. Like, these guys are still acting like YouTube might be something that goes away. Like, YouTube, that won't catch on. You know, like, they're just, oh, God, they suck.
Yeah. So we don't really know what they're reevaluating. We don't know if that whole partner thing is going to go away or not.
Somebody's at Nintendo headquarters like, maybe we could buy them. Like, is this YouTube thing catching on with the kids?
It's like, can we actually store 300 hours of video that gets uploaded a minute?
No, they totally can't. They tell you to put it on an SD card.
Totally would.
There are definitely some things they need to work on with YouTubers specifically, because when they send out early copies, guess who tends to break embargo?
Yeah.
YouTubers.
Yeah.
Well, that was
and pisses off all the other people that have been, you know, just fine with the time limits for that stuff.
Well, I thought I read something. I mean, it was like a week or two ago that like that was a big thing with. I think it was with Odyssey. Like they were changing the way they even interacted with small sites because. Or maybe it was Fire Emblem. It was one of those games. It was a game Nintendo made. But like somebody, same thing. Somebody broke the embargo, and they were just like, "Fuck small outlets. We're not going to give them access now." And which is kind of interesting. Like particularly when you look at the way that most corporations are sort of doubling down and combining, you know, and things are being taken over, and we're ending up with bigger and bigger conglomerates. It's sort of under that banner. What's happening with any sort of you know, air quotes, you know, journalism or just any enthusiast version of the press, whether it be on YouTube or writing, seems to be about smaller and smaller stuff with, you know, one or two big sites here and there. And that's sort of, I think that's one of the things that, that Nintendo is struggling with, is because this is a media landscape where they are used to, again, they're trying to operate like it's 2004. And it just doesn't, it doesn't work that way. Not with the way the stuff is, not when you have YouTubers that have, you know, a shit ton of influence compared to even something like GameSpot, you know, and they just, it's just always been their Achilles heel. They don't seem to really pay attention to what is happening around them. And you know, in some instances that's always worked for them. But it seems like in every matter besides actually making games, this serves them far worse, and they just haven't caught on to the fact that they are running a race and they are extremely behind.
Yeah, maybe they're starting to come to the conclusion that maybe being openly hostile to your most rabid fan base is probably not a great idea.
Especially the people that actually want to cover you as well.
Yeah. So,
and favorably as well. Like, these smaller folks are probably just gonna be like, oh my God, if Reggie would just poop in my mouth, the happiest day of my life. And whereas,
it's like how Bethesda has their whole, we're not sending out copies to early to the media, and then giving it out to YouTubers early.
Because
people that will just send out, hey, look at all this free shit they send me. Oh, this is awesome. Yeah. Skyrim's the best game ever. It's perfect. There's no issues.
And that's the other thing that's so crazy to me too, is that like when we're talking about, just as a side note, you know, we're sitting here talking about like and we've talked about it for a while, it's sort of like the way that games are moving towards a service-based model and everything else like that. And here you have a company like Bethesda who's put out a ton of single-player experiences, but they're not even letting big outlets cover them because they're mad at Kotaku. Like, come on, man. You know?
Yeah.
Which is insane to me.
And it's just all to hurt the audience itself, because we can let people know, hey, there's this issue that's here that you might need to consider.
Like, you know that if unless you are not paying attention and you cannot read, you are well aware that if you buy a Bethesda game, shit is probably going to be broken in some way, shape, or form. Like, Bethesda, I'm pretty sure in some language means broken. Or
they
malfunction.
They might be just in their own headquarters with one of their trees that they've got set up.
Dude, I saw a picture online that was like trees in Bethesda's headquarters, and it was like split through a wall.
Yep, that's the one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what you're getting into. And, you know, I don't know. Anyway, whatever. Doesn't matter. Yeah. But yeah, they need to get their shit together.
Yeah, so we'll keep following this. Yeah. And we'll keep following this because I'm sure well, it's not the end of the story. That's for sure.
No.
It never goes with them.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably going to announce their changes, and that's going to be worse. So that's probably how it's
the change
be
is we are going to act like YouTube got shut down.
Yeah. So
that's
the
change.
Yeah. And okay, so our final story of the week is, of course, the Star Wars Battlefront 2 dumpster fire.
There really is no perfect way to go into this. But before
is that if you guys are on Reset Era, which is the NeoGAF replacement, the OT's title is "This Deal Is Getting Worse All the Time."
All right. So before we let Lee just drop trowel and just shit all over this, just a very quick sort of summary of what's going on here. So, of course, you know, Star Wars Battlefront 2, it was very hyped. It's DICE. Previews were looking great. Graphics look good. From what people have told me, the essential gameplay is actually of good quality. But here's
the problem. Based on E3.
Yeah. Hmm. So, for the record, the whole gaming community, ever since, you know, Shadow of War, you know, Middle Earth Shadow of War started to come about, the whole game community is already really pissed at microtransactions and especially loot boxes. Mm-hmm. And EA apparently is really bad at I guess, seeing which way the wind blows, or, you know, feel, you know, reading the room or whatever.
Yeah.
And so as soon as the early access stuff started, which is basically how we know all of this stuff now, yeah. They did the early access, and we found out a few things. For example, the loot boxes, which are basically – it's basically pay to win because all of these basically have to be purchased with either real-world money or you can use credits, which in this case is the crystal system. Here's the problem, though. In order to get these crystals, you essentially have to grind. And to a certain extent, okay, you know, Overwatch does that. And, you know, at least Overwatch is actually a quality game. But...
Well, but to be fair, though, Overwatch doesn't do anything. There's nothing pay to win in Overwatch. Like, we'll get into my feelings about loot boxes once you're done, Brandon. But I do want to point out that the difference there is that Overwatch is strictly cosmetic. You cannot gain an advantage from buying something from...
Whereas in this, in Star Wars Battlefront 2, you totally can. And here...
You're encouraged to.
Yes, and it gets worse. Because if you want to grind for credits, if you try to do it for too long, they'll pull a Candy Crush on you and basically give you a artificial time window, a time limit. It's like, okay, you got this credit, and now next time you can get credits is 8 hours.
Yeah, that's the arcade mode.
Yeah. It gets worse, because then you do that, and then eventually you go 14 hours, and then like 30 hours, and it's literally funneling you, leading you into having to spend money to get an advantage. And then you find out that heroes, the actual hero characters, at the review event, there was only like 10,000. Now they've drawn it up to 60.
Yeah, the currency, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a whole shit ton of shit show stuff. And
yeah, it's... The thing about this that's so... So it's very easy, right, like objectively to be like, fuck EA, because EA is just – EA is EA, right? Like, but one of the things that I think that's really important to examine about this issue is that when you look at the entire I hesitate to even use a word this strong, but the insidiousness of the pay-to-win model of slapping microtransactions into a game like this in the first place is really crazy, because you're paying $60 to get in the door. And then, you know, there were some people that did a bunch of math on Reddit that said it would take something like 4,000 hours to unlock everything in the game. Mm-hmm. Which in and of itself is absolutely insane. And so one of the things that happened is to just add, you know, more to what Brandon was saying, is that, you know, these, the EA folks went on Reddit and basically tried to defend themselves in a lot of ways.
Oh, God, yes. This was the biggest shit show. Because here's the thing. The EA actually made it worse with their scummy behavior.
It's like trying to go into the Den of Lions and try and reason with them.
No, yeah, it's like going into the Den of Lions with a fucking steak suit on and being like, so, what's going on, fellas?
And it gets worse because, okay, so here's the thing about that AMA. First of all, the arrogance that they thought that they could alleviate all of these concerns with just an AMA. Like, that just shows you their mindset, first of all. But then, not only does it become obvious if you... Okay, so I'm pretty sure, like, the whole AMA is still up there, and you can go on Reddit.
It's linked right there on that.
Yeah, and it becomes... Not only does it become obvious that they basically started deleting any questions that they thought would be too uncomfortable. And like, they actually came out and said, look, if we think this is becoming too hostile, we'll just stop the AMA. And you also get a feeling that a lot of these responses were like canned responses. Like, they were basically pre-prepared by EA for any particular question.
Yeah, it was all very PR speak.
But not only that, you also start to realize they started astroturfing the thing, trying to take out any references to the times in the past that EA tried to bribe the people on the subreddit.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of, I mean, bottom line, there was a lot of dirtiness that went on in this. But so, excuse me, the big thing that stuck out to me, though, with was how dirty this was. And I really wish that Dan Reb was here, because he works for a company that deals with free-to-play games. Here is the thing that excuse me, that I find most egregious out of all of this, and it's not EA. And this is, and I can commence on shitting on EA for like 3 hours. That's not hard. What bugs me the most about this has been the apathy that some gamers have had towards this entire idea. Like, you guys have heard me talk about this I don't know how many times, like how gamers are so willing to just line up and take it because a company makes something that they like. What has been historically a problem with any of these models where developers and publishers are trying to get more money out of the gamer, it always happens on these really huge titles that are always guaranteed to sell. We saw it happen with Batman Arkham City, where the WB Games basically became the poster child of Project $10, even though that was EA's idea, because they took it a step further, where people were locking multiplayer modes behind a $10 online access pass to combat used games. Fucking WB Games came out and said, we're going to lock single player shit behind a paywall. And now we see the same thing happening with loot boxes. You see it with WB Games. Like, Phil, you talked about this on one of our previous episodes, where basically at the end game, you have to pay for orcs if you actually want to finish the game,
yeah,
rather than actually grinding it out. Now you have EA taking that one step further, and arguably quite a few more than that, and saying, you know, creating an entire game based around the fact that they want you to pay money so you can actually be remotely competitive. And the interesting part about this for me has been two things. The first has been, again, seeing how gamers are completely willing to lay down for this because it's something that they want to play.
Oh, God, yeah. I saw this shit on Game Informer when...
Yeah, it's insane how people are like, but it's Star Wars, guys. I mean, like, I don't have to do anything. Like, okay, so... Star Wars, as everyone knows, is culturally relevant. It's not.
Yeah.
It's like, and the reason I bring that up is that EA has this same loot box system in Need for Speed, and no one cares because it's Need for Speed. It's not Star Wars. And so that's part of this that is so insidious. EA took what is arguably the biggest franchise in the world, and they have the license, and they're making a game out of it, and so there is a built-in audience that is willing to buy that game no matter what. EA has also had a tremendous amount of success with loot boxes, with things like FIFA and everything else like that. This is in their DNA as far as the way that they operate. So having EA pull this, I'm not surprised, and I don't know why anybody else is. What's crazy to me about it has been the gamers, the way that they reacted, the way that a lot of them don't have a problem. However, there has been so much backlash about this. There's been a couple of key things that have happened that I think are very, very important for how the industry is going to continue in the future. The first is, and let's just use this as the foundation. The first is that EA created a game that they want you to pay $60 for, but it essentially operates in the same way that a free-to-play game does. With to what you guys were mentioning earlier, the arcade mode has a time limit on how much XP you can earn. It tells you to come back later. The fact that it is literally built around you spending – I think GameSpot – and I don't have the numbers in front of me. You have to forgive me. But I believe GameSpot spent something like $2,000 on loot boxes to be able to get everything in the game. So this is so if we use that as a baseline, right? So number one, they have a game that costs $60 to get in the door and basically requires either $2,000 if you're lucky to unlock everything or over 4,000 hours of playtime. Now, just to put that on an even keel with numbers that make sense, right? I have played WoW since it came out in 2004. I don't have 4,000 hours in that game, and it's 13 years old. Okay? This is and Battlefront, you know Battlefront 3 is going to come out next year. So EA essentially created a game that no one could actually get everything done in. Now, I've heard people be like, well, it doesn't matter. You're not meant to unlock everything in these games. That's not the point. That doesn't excuse what they've done here. Okay, so those with those things set out, the things that have most surprised me about this has been the first is that you have a congressman looking into this. You have people in – and oh, God, forgive me. I'm so sorry. I can't remember the country. Belgium. You have people looking into that and going, this is gambling. And yeah, we want to look into this.
And for the record, I want to get – I think we really need to give – I think Jim Sterling deserves a lot of credit for this because he's really been the guy who's been bringing up the – bringing this to light on the internet for quite a while now. And I think the last year or so, he's really been able to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And
but- – No, and I watched Sterling's thing about that. He was absolutely right. I think he's unfair to Blizzard, but the problem is that you can't put Blizzard and EA on the same level because they are just fundamentally completely different companies. Blizzard has their model with Overwatch truly to finance keep because here's so like let's talk about something else foundationally that's important in this conversation is that with online shooters, the biggest thing that you face. Is online shooters always have expansion packs. They always do. They have expansion maps. And so what happens with every online shooter is that you always end up splintering the player base. So, you know, these people that don't have the map packs can't play with the people that do. And when you splinter the player base, eventually people stop logging in because they can't get a match fast enough. The only games that really don't have this problem are things like Call of Duty. So when you have a smaller game, now of course Battlefront is not that, but when you have a smaller game, that goes that route and has expansions that split up the player base, that can become a problem for actually keeping people on, keeping matches, you know, so they can actually be found and things like that. Overwatch's use of loot boxes was done, according to Blizzard, was so that they could continue to give out maps for free and give out characters for free so that the entire game remains on an even keel as far as if so-and-so has access to this new character, you do too. If there's this new map, you're going to be able to play on it. Same with anybody else that has this game. You buy this game once, we're going to give you all of the content, period. The trade-off for that is we do have loot boxes, and they have cosmetics in them. Nothing in those loot boxes changes the way that the game is played, which is the fundamental difference here. The loot boxes in Battlefront change the way that this game is played. And yeah, there are things that you can get from those loot boxes that actually make you overpowered.
Yep.
In regular play. So the people that don't put in money, that don't essentially jump into the gambling pool that EA has created here, are going to be at a disadvantage. And what happens is when players end up in that situation, one of two things happen. Either they quit playing or they pony up money. One of those two things. So that's the fundamental issue here, right? Now, the good thing out of all of this stuff that has happened is that I think – and I'm of two minds on this, and I'll get into that in just a second. But I think it's wonderful that someone in government somewhere is looking at this, if only for the reason to scare these companies into thinking that they can't keep pulling this shit. I don't want the government to be involved in this, because I think the minute you step into that, you get it, and you can start to overregulate what is essentially, in some cases, art. However, at the same time, I think one could argue if this was truly art, it wouldn't be asking you to insert quarters all the time.
Exactly.
So there's that portion of it. And in fact, a congressman in Colorado tweeted to Disney and to Bob Iger and basically said, you guys have put your name on a game that encourages gambling that is also focused towards kids. Like, I could almost say – no, and it's true, though. Like, yeah. the thing that – Like with Call of Duty, like that was the thing. I remember talking to somebody like, well, why don't they do this for Call of Duty? It's because Call of Duty is not on the surface level aimed towards kids. Star Wars is universal in a way that Call of Duty will never be.
Exactly.
And so you are going to have those kids. My kid wants to play Battlefront 2. You know, he's seen all that stuff. He wants to be able to get in there and be a Jedi and wreck people and do all that, especially since the game looks so good. But so you've had congressmen, you know, tweet towards Disney about this. Disney has taken notice of it. The other thing that was absolutely crazy to me was that with the loot box controversy that has happened, this was listed on the Washington Post.
Yep.
Where now you have Wall Street essentially freaking out because of how social media is react towards what EA is doing and lowered their projections for EA. So this is hitting EA's bottom line in the first way that I can ever think of, besides like somebody putting out a bullshit system that does, you know, that sucks or something, and then Wall Street, you know, has a down forecast on their stock. Before this game even came out, because of the initial reaction, Wall Street lowered their predictions on EA and changed whether or not they think you should buy EA stock, which is huge. This is the kind of thing that hits rich people in their bottom line and gets these kinds of things changed. Yeah. The funny part about this, though, is that with that happening, is that U.S. gamer Kat Bailey talked to some EA developers, and EA has said, and they said this in their statement as well, that they are planning on bringing back the loot box transactions because EA, and this was Kat Bailey's words, EA feels that it is a balance issue, not that there's actually an issue with the loot boxes, and that's not what gamers are upset about. And here's the thing that's – I know, and it sounds funny to us, right? But here's the thing that's interesting about that. I think that – and this is the cynical part of me, but this is the part where I just, again, seeing how businesses operate and the way that these companies work, this makes complete sense to me. Because here's what happens. So EA can basically calm down a huge group of people that were on the fence about buying the game because they're Star Wars lovers and everything else like that, and go, look, there's not going to be microtransactions or anything else like that. So those people plunk down their $60. They're in the door. 3 months later, they bring out some new shiny thing that can be had in loot boxes. They've already got people $60. And it's just like DLC in that sense, guys. It's a lot easier to ask people for $10 down the line if they still have the game, because people aren't thinking about the combined price of, oh, I paid $60 for this, and now they want 20, so that's 80. They're just going, oh, well, I spent $60, and now I can get 20 and get this new kind of thing. This might actually be kind of cool. That feels like the route that EA is going with. And that's why they haven't just said outright, we're going to remove this entirely and let the game stand on its own 2 feet. Because they know, like, let's say just napkin math, right? Let's say they sell 5 million copies of this game, right? And in 3 months, they lay down, you know, they have the 5 million people that are playing the game. And in 3 months, 1 million people buy a $20 DLC, right, of just loot boxes, right? Think about how much money that is.
Yeah, that's still, you know, a lot of money.
But people are – that's $20 million.
Yeah.
Okay. And we know – like, no one can say anything about this. Like, I've heard the argument that these games are so big and Blockbuster, you know, they cost as much as movies. I don't care as a consumer. It is not my job to prop up what you have. And this whole microtransaction fetish that the industry has right now is only there to make more money. It's not making new games. It's not creating a quality of life or anything else like that that makes games better for people. I heard somebody saying, oh, well, you know, the problem here is that games are too cheap and they really should just raise the
base. Yeah, Jim Sterling has pretty persuasively proven that that's a load of shit.
I don't actually follow Jim Sterling. I did see his microtransactions, so maybe he's on the same page as me, because when I heard that, it was like, so wait a minute. So that means they'll just charge us $70 in the microtransactions and the DLC and everything will still be there. It's all the cherry on the top, except in this case, they want the cherry to collapse the fucking sundae. Like, well, this is what they're about.
Yeah. I mean, in the case of, you know, games being more expensive, they already are. I mean, games are coming out with multiple versions now. $60 is just getting in the door.
And there's something else I want to bring up, because it's probably one of the things that's really upset me about all of this. So for those who don't know, because of all this backlash, DICE went back and have disabled the real money purchases, and they've also temporarily turned off the credits thing.
That's the key word here.
Yeah, temporary. And I'll bring that up in a little second, but because we already know what EA did to Visceral, which Visceral was an in-house, you know, company that was developed within EA, and they went ahead and killed it. And EA is basically the Jack the Ripper of development studios. We all know that.
But yeah, I think that's fair.
But yeah. Here's, I think, if there's one thing I've learned from reading a lot of this stuff, it's this. DICE apparently made a pretty solid game all around.
They always do.
Well, that's the insidious
part. And they didn't, and here's the thing. Here's what really pissed me off. from what I've read, they apparently have very little control on how EA manages to, you know, how they apparently have very little control over how EA, you know, puts in these microtransactions and stuff. Apparently, it's 100%. They have to do it by order of EA.
I don't believe that. And I'll tell you why I don't believe that. Because this game, like and we are talking about just math, but this game is strictly designed around you not being able to finish it in a way unless you pay. That is built into the DNA of the game. And, you know, and to that point, like one of the things that they did is if you guys recall, one of the not honest tweets that the EA developers did is they sent something out and said that they reduced the cost of unlocks by 75%. But what they didn't put in that tweet was they also reduced the payout of everything by 75%.
Yeah.
So it's so difficult to, and I also, don't get me wrong. I think that there are a lot of developers out there that just want to make a good game and they want to put something out that people want to play and things like that. But this is a relationship where the developers have to put in the actual systems for companies like EA to be able to do this kind of thing. But they're also at the mercy of people like EA because they have to make the game the way that EA wants because EA is ponying up the money. But it's also not difficult for me to also think that some of these developers are frankly in on it because of the way that these things are designed. You know, the stockholders in EA and hell, a lot of the people at the top don't even fucking play games. You really think they're going to sit down and critique the way that Battlefield's monetization actually works? No, they're expecting the developers to do that. And I've seen stuff where developers are just as hardcore about slamming that stuff in the games as anybody else. And so I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush here, even though, you know, I kind of am. This feels like this is a problem where the developers have not gotten enough shit about it because they're the ones implementing it. Even because it's very easy to point at a company like EA and go, you're evil, right? Like, you're evil. This is the problem. But at the same time, I think we're letting them off the hook. You know, like, this is a fundamental – because we talked about budgets too, right? Like, this is a fundamental problem with management of any of these games. And the thing is, the problem with microtransactions is they don't make the game better. Like, that's the number one problem here. Like, when we talk about the framework for everything is that the microtransactions don't make the games better. If they did, that would be one thing. But they don't. We know that money is just going off the top so some fucking EA head honcho can snort more fucking cocaine off of a hooker's ass. You know, like, yeah. That's what we know is happening. Like, I think you would have gamers fundamentally be okay with the idea of microtransactions if they got something for it, which in the case of Overwatch, that they do. It was the same backlash that we saw with the Xbox One. The reason that Steam has taken off, and people can argue this with me as much as they want, the big reason that Steam took off was because of sales. And the sales only happened because people said, okay, we're losing something fundamental in this process, which is the actual product in our hands. What are you going to give us in lieu of that? And they said, how about shit dirt cheap? How about that? So if you lose the physicality of this object, but it only costs you $20 instead of $60, is that a price you're willing to pay? And people resoundingly said yes, to the point where you can't really find PC games in the store anymore. And Microsoft completely missed the boat on that with them wanting to do like a Steam-like console because they didn't have the reputation that they were going to back that up with sales. In the same way that they weren't going to give the same benefit to the consumer that Steam did. This is the same, essentially the same argument is, what are your microtransactions giving me? In the sense of Overwatch, that means that I will never have to pay for expansions. I'll never have to pay for new characters or anything else like that. In the case of Battlefront, there is no give and take there. It is literally, you paid for this game, and if you want to be remotely competitive, you're going to have to give us more money.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And, you know, when you look at a system like that, there is no way that DICE was not complicit in this.
I'm afraid you've convinced me.
It's too integrated.
It's ingrained into it. Yeah. Like, it's a gotcha game at that point. And that's the part that freaks me out about all
it's
of
worse
this.
Than it. It's worse than that. It's
because it wants money up front and on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because they've essentially gone as far as anybody has gone in integrating mobile gaming microtransactions into an actual console game.
Yeah.
That isn't like a free-to-play game up front.
And, you know, just this is making me worry.
Brandon explained the whole system. I was confused the whole way. It's like, How the fuck do I just shoot people in the fucking head?
Yeah.
Well, like, to break it down to even more of a base level. So let me ask you guys a question. This is really simple. When you guys think of Star Wars, who are the two main characters that you think of?
Luke and Vader.
Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader.
To get Luke Skywalker, you would have to play this game for 40 hours.
And that's after the... Yeah, no, that was before the price drop, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, but we know that the rewards were also reduced. So yeah, same thing, you'd have to pay. So to unlock the two most iconic characters in Star Wars, you would have to pay. You would have to play this game like it was like Witcher 3. I need to put in a minimum of 80 hours.
And it gets worse too. It gets worse too because you can only have one hero spawn on a map at once.
Yep.
So you could have him unlocked and then not be able to use him because somebody else spawned before you.
So just to sort of put a cap on this. You know, before we move on, two things. Number one, this has made me kind of worried about Anthem.
Yeah.
Because
you should be. Yeah.
This is the biggest worry for anything with EA's name on it. Like, this is Activision 2.0. This is Activision on steroids. All of the evil shit that we thought Activision does or has done, EA is officially the Doctor Doom of video games. Like,
yeah.
The only thing that's missing is literally him yelling Richards and then trying to choke out a consumer.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If what we've seen what happens to Visceral, if they try to pull this shit with Anthem, you can pretty much say goodbye to BioWare. And
yeah,
that will really suck because BioWare has proven that if you give them the space, they have enough talented people that if you give them the space and the time, they make some really quality products, Mass Effect Andromeda notwithstanding, because, you know, they basically murdered that game. But obviously, if they end up killing BioWare, and, you know, that's sort of where the predictions are going, you know, obviously there will be blood in the streets. And but that's one thing. But second of all, and I think to put a cap on all this, and I think this is one of the most important things to get out of this, this is only the beginning. This all came to a head with Battlefront 2, but this is really – Battlefront 2 sort of became the edifice for what was essentially something that has been coming to a head over the last couple of years.
Yeah, this is the amalgamation of everything that people are afraid of when it came to microtransactions and free-to-play models.
And it's not going to end with Battlefront 2.
This is it. Yeah.
This is the showdown here. Mm-hmm. People have finally discovered, you know, the whole thing is finally broken wide open, and it's not going to just end with this. Don't expect, you know, this to just die down after Battlefront.
Yeah, the other thing that – and this will just be the last thing that I say on this part because I've obviously taken up a huge chunk of the time on this conversation. The most interesting thing out of this that I read as far as responses was, and again, I'll find the link for our show notes. But I read something from the guy that designed the loot box system and the free-to-play system for Star Wars Galaxies, which was really the prototype for what EA is doing here. And the one of the things that he wrote – and this was the part that stuck out to me the most, is he said when you are designing anything with these kinds of transactions in mind, that 95% of the player base is never going to pay you a dime, and that you have to design that game so that at least that 95% still has a functional game that they can play and that they can enjoy. Because if you provide the framework for them to do so, they will give you money. But again, it's 95%. They are expecting 95% of the people to play that game to not pay a dime. And this was for an MMO, okay? And he came out and was just like, I can't believe EA is doing this. Like, EA and this sort of bow ties, you know, what Brandon is saying, is that this is the end game result of everything that we've been worried about. Even people that design this stuff to be fair to players are like, oh my God, what are you doing, EA? And the fact that you have people on the inside of the industry that will help design these kinds of systems going, man, you guys really fucked this up. speaks to the fact that this is nothing more than greed. Anybody can frame it however they want, but the entire loot box system in this game was designed to be a slot machine to extract money from people. And that's why people are going so hard with the idea that this is gambling and everything else like that, and frankly why it probably should be looked at that way. I've seen people be like, well, what about baseball cards? If I buy a pack of baseball cards, I still have baseball cards after I give them the money. That's the key difference here. With a loot box, you give people money and you don't get anything that has any intrinsic value except the value that the game it works in provides. And that value is not transferable at all. That's what makes it not have a value in and of itself. And that's the key difference. And that's why you have people throwing around things like gambling and everything else like that. The worst part about this is, and this is the part that kills me. When we talk, because one of the things that you guys, anybody that's listened to this, and of course you guys know, I look a lot at the business side of the way the video games industry works. This is going to do nothing good for the industry, and that's what scares me. If you have the government looking into this, which to be fair, I think they should to a certain extent, I think that the specter of the government looking into this will get something done. But the thing that is scary about this is that if this works in some way, then the dam is already broken. Like, they've been building the pressure against it for a long time. And EA basically put a giant crack in it. And then if they still make money off of this and they still double down on these pay-to-win mechanics in a game like this, they are going to do it to everything. And the video game industry, the AAA video game industry at least, is very much a monkey-see, monkey-do industry. Remember one of the things we talked about, I think it was a couple of years ago on the show, but when Call of Duty Modern Warfare came out, the entire games industry lost its mind because that game sold so much. Everyone was like, now we have to do Call of Duty numbers. That's the only way that we can be happy. It's what cracked Square in half and made those guys go nuts. You know, like, this industry is on that perpetual paper chase in that sense. And what EA has done is basically shown everybody this is the way that it's going to look in the future. And to Brandon's point, that means that, you know, this could possibly crash BioWare, because you're not going to tell me that if EA did this with a PvP shooter, they're not going to do it in a PvP shooter that they fully own. Because the big thing here is, I feel like one of the big reasons they backed off of their loot box standard is they own Star Wars. All right, and Disney is a company that will take a hit on their bottom line.
Oh, yeah, that's the fun part, because basically Mickey Mouse came over to EA and hit them with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's really important here is that Disney will take a hit. Disney will not let their stuff take a hit, their reputation take a hit. They would much rather lose money than actually have their IP be viewed as a problem. And like from all the stuff that I read, Bob Iger called EA over this. And Bob Iger is the guy running Disney. And so this is the guy. This guy is dropping Thor's hammer on your ass if you get a phone call from him. And don't forget, EA being given the Star Wars license is essentially a license to print money for them. That is the most damning part about all of this, is that they got a license. They could put out mediocre games till the end of time with the Star Wars license, and they could make more money than anyone. And they still wanted more. That is the scariest part about this. They said, we have a player base that will take anything that we try to fuck them with. And that is the scariest part about this. And I don't think it's enough for gamers to stand up and go, I don't want to deal with this. We've seen a lot of people reach out and make their voices heard and everything, but this game is still going to sell. And that's the part that freaks me out, because gamers are still just completely willing to take it. Anyway, that's all I have to say on it.
I think it'd be the sad part is if they had done what Forza does every year, which is not have the microtransactions in for the first few weeks, and then put it in after all the reviews and the launch reception from the audience, they would have had none of these issues, which is still a shitty situation that Forza does every year. Hmm. Is, hey, we're not having these in, though they admitted this year that it's going to be in there eventually. It just sort of devalues some of that initial feedback, I guess.
And that's something else that's crazy about what you're talking about, Chris, is that that means that the way that these games are evaluated on the front end, this isn't going to be what they are later. And that's the scary part. And once the media has moved on and everybody else has moved on, then that's when they can slide these things in, and people aren't going to say anything, or you're not going to see that kind of coverage. Like, they made this change to the game, you know, 2 months afterwards.
Yeah.
And now all of this stuff where what might have been complete before, now you got to pay. Because that's not how any of this works. That's not
how the audience is willing to push back in some way. Which happened with like Forza, when the VIP was a temporary thing, instead of like, oh, you're only VIP for 30 days. For us, they've fixed that, because people said, this is fucked up. This is how you've been doing it for 5-6 years or whatever it's been.
You're charging us for this, and then you're going to just take it away from us?
Yeah, it's like, you're only special to us for, you know, 30 or 90 days or whatever it lasted. It's like, that's really stupid. But then you get like the NBA 2K stuff, where the audience doesn't give a shit about it, and because it's a sports game, the general gaming audience doesn't give a shit about it. So even when it gets you know, articles on Kotaku or whatever, it gets no pushback like Star Wars does, like Forza does, like some of these others do.
Yeah, and I think that's because it's essentially two different audiences at that point. Like, the people that are buying the annualized sports games aren't necessarily the same guys that are going to buy something like Anthem.
Yeah, it's the casual crowd that doesn't care. They think it's just like the mobile games they play.
Yep.
Which is sort of thing that people have sort of been missing, is mobile games has made the casual part of this industry completely used to all this stuff. And when they run into a game that doesn't have it, at least as far as like competitive stuff or sports stuff, they wonder what's going on. Because they're fine with chucking in $5-$10 a week or more if it's a game they really like. They don't really care about, oh, I put down $60 initially. And it's going to be interesting to see how things go from here, just with future games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I see two things potentially happening, and we'll cap it off after this, because we got one more story to go to after. So what either ends up happening is EA and DICE go through and completely overhaul the progression system of the game, which
I can definitely see that.
To be fair, that's going to take a lot of work, because the way they have it right now is so deeply integrated that it's going to be a little bit.
They're
going
to have to pull a Destiny, basically.
Yeah.
It's also the only crew out they have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that happens, or, and this is the more unlikely one, but it's the more drastic, if EA is not willing to do this and they just kind of leave it for a couple of months and then put it back in and just kind of pull things back only a little bit, just as a token gesture. And then Disney gets involved and goes, no, you don't have the Star Wars license anymore. And the game is forced to be recalled. That would be the most drastic, but it's actually could happen.
Yeah, well, they'll pull a two-human on them.
Yeah, the thing that scares me is what Brandon mentioned earlier, was that this is very much going to be what happens to Anthem. Because the big thing happening right now is Disney is going to be able to be the one that says, you guys can't do this to our property. Yeah. But EA is going to own Anthem. So who's going to tell them not to do that? And that's the thing and the thing is, what's interesting about that is this has roots in the way that BioWare works. BioWare originally did Mass Effect because they were like, we want to do our own sci-fi series that we own.
Yeah.
And now you take that to the next degree. It's like, okay, we have our own sci-fi series that we can own, and we're going to jam it full of this because nobody can tell us not to. And that's the part that's crazy to me about it, is that, yeah, nobody can tell you not to, but you're not actually thinking about why you shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, maybe this will be a cautionary thing for them. I don't know. We have to wait and see, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay, so with that out of the way, the Video Game Awards nominees are out. That's the thing.
Yay.
Feel like Witcher 3 should have been on there, I'm just saying. I know it came out in 2015, but Jesus Christ.
You can have sex on top of a stuffed unicorn.
I mean, seriously, if that's not Game of the Year, it's the Game of the Decade material, I don't know what is. Fucking prudes.
But, yeah. So there's a bunch of nominees, I suppose. Can go through them here. Your Game of the Year nominations. You got Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. You got
Solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah. Super Mario Odyssey. That's not really too surprising. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is remarkable.
I totally think that should not be qualified, for the record.
Yeah, especially since it's not finished yet.
It's not finished.
Yeah, it's basically a beta.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Talk to us in 2018.
Jesus. Persona 5, that's on there, so that's good. And Horizon Zero Dawn, so yeah, good ones.
Some quality.
Yeah, there's some quality there. Let's see, you got Best Game Direction, you got, what do we have here? Wolfenstein 2, The New Order. Well, not really too surprised there. That's a fantastic game.
It's New Colossus.
Yeah, New Colossus, yeah.
New something.
Yeah, New Colossus. Let's see, Resident Evil 7 Biohazard. So,
what a crafty name.
I haven't played that one yet, so don't know. Breath of the Wild again for Onuma, because he's that good. Mario Odyssey again. Horizon Zero Dawn again. I'm detecting a pattern here.
Mm-hmm.
Was Last Guardian released this year?
It was.
That's interesting to me that it's not on the list.
Yeah, best narrative. Let's see what we got here. What Remains of Edith Finch? Played Nier Automata. I could agree with that.
Hillary, oh yeah.
Send of a Sacrifice. That should definitely be on there. What else we got here? Wolfenstein 2. Yes. Yeah, Horizon Zero Dawn again. Nothing I don't agree with there, except I probably could have gone with. No, I was going to say Final Fantasy 15, but no. Best art direction. We have Destiny 2. I'm not sure why. Cuphead. I could definitely agree with.
Oh yeah.
Breath of the Wild again.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, so they're nominated for just about everything. Persona 5 is on Best Art Direction, which I can agree with. Horizon Zero Dawn as well. We're seeing a lot of the same people here.
That's definitely one of those years.
Yeah. Best Score or Music, you have Destiny 2. Don't know why. Cuphead. Yes. Nier Automata. Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Zelda Breath of the Wild again, Mario Odyssey again, Persona 5 again. I could agree with the soundtrack for Persona 5 being GOTY worthy.
Oh, when it becomes a freaking internet meme.
Yeah. Next category is, Best Audio Design. And this is our last category, I think. Nope. Destiny 2.
There's a ton more.
Well, there's a lot more. Well, we won't go through all of them, but anyway. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. And yes, I actually think that one should win because of how just in-depth that...
Yeah, pure design-wise, that has to win.
Yeah. That is amazing. Resident Evil 7, Biohazard. I guess, okay, sure. Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, again. Mario Odyssey, again. It's like, I wonder if they just throw these in there now.
Yeah, because I don't know why Breath of the Wild would be on music, because I don't remember much of the music there.
No,
yeah,
there really wasn't much.
There wasn't much music.
Yeah. Let's see. Well, I get, it was best score.
Audio sign. Music, oh, it did the thing when you open a chest.
Okay.
Yeah. what else do we got here? You want to keep going? Nah, well. So we'll leave the rest of these for...
The thing I like about Best Performance is it's four women versus a guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Four women and one guy. Kind of the not all the usual suspects either.
No.
All right.
So, yeah, that's the Game Awards. You can vote.
Oh, yeah. Best Ongoing Game, Warframe should win.
Mm.
Not Destiny 2 or PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds that came out this year.
No. Yeah.
Can't say they're ongoing when they're, you know, out for less than a few months.
Yeah, well, Destiny did announce the expansion and all that, so I guess that counts, sort of.
Maybe. Yeah, though I'm thinking more just pure update support.
Yeah, well, I mean, PlayerUnknown Battleground has to be continually updated because it's not done yet.
It's early access, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, good job, you're making sure that people get their $30 worth.
Yeah, it's going
to
be...
Versus this game that's been worked on for... 5 years and released its biggest update yet.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, yeah. And finally, we're going to finish off the show with our picks of the week. My pick this week won't cost you anything because it's actually a YouTube channel. It's one you might not have heard of. It's called Retro Gaming Mechanics Explained. The video I'm going to highlight is the Pac-Man kill screen, which he goes through step by step and explains why it happens. And it actually illustrates every single step and every single tile that gets placed on that screen as to how it ends up happening. So if you're ever curious about why this kind of stuff happens, yeah, check out that that video and that channel. A lot of good stuff. He also has other videos on the NES's loading seam and other fun technical things like how the Game Genie works and all that stuff. So good channel. Check it out. Their videos are reasonably well produced. So yeah, have a look at that. How about you, Pat?
Well, before I go into mine, I just want to say, Lee, I bought that hard drive that you recommended for me, and it was so good that that was actually my pick of the week a couple weeks ago.
Awesome.
So there's that. But for anyone who wants a better look at Blaze Blue Cross Tag Battle, I included a link here in the show notes that will basically give you 10 minutes of gameplay footage so you can get a feel for how it works as opposed to other anime fighters. I think they have a really good thing going here with this one, so give it a look.
Yeah, all right. So, Brandon?
Yeah, so mine is from Game Informer, and specifically it's about CD Projekt Red. So as everybody knows, CD Projekt Red, now that Witcher 3 and Gwent are now out of the gate, of course they're working now on Cyberpunk 2077. And because of the microtransactions controversy, they've actually had to come out and tell everyone that, no, there will not be any loot boxes or microtransactions that will be in Cyberpunk 2077. Like, yeah. Because of all this shit, and because apparently there was this rumor that they were looking into getting into the games as service model, they basically had to come out and, you know, probably one of the most respected developers out there basically had to come out and say, no, we don't have this yet.
Yeah. Well, they do have a game as a service. It's Gwent.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm totally okay with their microtransaction model. I don't think it's too onerous, so.
No.
Yeah, so good stuff. That game cannot come out soon enough. God damn it, hurry up.
Yeah.
Seriously. So, Chris, Lee, it doesn't look like you guys have a pick for this week, but that's
okay. I actually do.
All right.
Just because I wasn't aware we were even doing this thing, so I'm doing it off the dome.
All right.
No, I went actually this past Thursday. My wife took us out to see – and this will cost some money, but my wife took us out to see the Zelda Symphony of the Goddess, where they basically just do 2 hours of Zelda music. And I had seen Video Games Live, which I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed. And I really enjoyed Symphony of the Goddess. So if it comes out anywhere near you guys, you know, where you live, it's totally worth seeing. There's not a lot of, there's not any real, crowd interaction. Like, you know, like the lady that was conducting the orchestra would bow after every song. But they do, a video wall where you can see clips from the game and things like that. And a lot of times they're actually playing the music, real time with what they're lining up in the video. So it's definitely fun to watch. It's definitely interesting. My kid's favorite series is Zelda, so he completely got geeked off of it. And it was a trip. Like, the people really showed up and showed out. Like, that we found one lady that was sitting next to us was dressed up like one of the fairies. Like, even had her makeup done that way. There were all kinds of kids dressed up as Link. One lady showed up as a dinosaur, so I don't know what she thought she was coming to, but, you know, whatever. But yeah, if anybody actually has the Symphony of the Goddess come near their hometown, it's totally worth checking out. It's a lot of fun. The show itself was 2 hours, and the conductor for the series for the night ended up doing the last part of the show after the intermission with an actual Wind Waker. That was her baton, so it was very 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 cool.
Nice, cool. Yeah, right. I know that Dan Rip goes to this every year. He doesn't miss a show. So whenever it's in his area, he goes there. That's why he's not going to PSX this year.
Oh, okay.
Just to see that. So,
yeah.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, and Chris?
Go buy Rocket League. It's out on Switch now. It's a pretty good version of that game. It doesn't look as good as the others, obviously. But you can get Mario and Luigi versions of the... one of the type of cars.
Is there a death stare?
They're not in the game.
Oh.
Their cars make the Mario jump sound when you jump.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. I think there's a Metroid Samus. The ship is sort of remade as a car in the game.
Mm. Okay.
So that's another thing that has to drop. So I haven't seen that yet. But yeah, it's out on all the consoles and PC, and it's probably the best multiplayer game out there right now.
Yeah.
And it's a fucking $20 game.
Yeah.
You don't need to spend $60 on this game unless you want to buy it on three of the four consoles.
Yeah.
Three of the platforms, which I have done because I own it on – I got it for free on PS Plus for PS4. Mm-hmm. And paid $20 for it on Steam, Xbox One, and Switch.
Wow.
And it's that good of a game. Yeah. And I also spend money on the microtransactions because it's real good. They keep adding cool stuff.
Hmm.
If you remember when they teased the Batman vs. Superman car, Batmobile that was in there, the trailer had like a Batman logo popping out of the goal when it exploded.
Hmm.
They added that actually into the game. Anybody that bought that car gets that as like a free goal explosion they can equip,
nice.
Which is something I bought almost 2 years ago, and I got more out of it, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
And it's just a game that people should check out, especially if you got a Switch.
Yes. It's car soccer, people. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if the BBC is getting royalties.
How would they get that?
It took a while for Pat to get that one, but yeah. Yeah.
It's true, though.
Yeah, but anyways. So yeah, I think that's the show for this week, folks. Yeah, it was a fun one, quote unquote fun.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not so fun for EA, but fun for us.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so if you're not subscribed to the program, you can do so on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, as they want us to call it now. Tune in, Google Play, or your favorite RSS reader or podcast aggregator app. You can also check us out at smashpad.com or facebook.com/smashpadsocial, facebook.com/dayzerooupdate. Check us out there. So with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I can't be bought with microtransactions.
See you next week.